Welcome, everybody, particularly representatives of Treasury and SARS. We're dealing now with the international agreements. We haven't had this term. Last term, we had quite a few very quickly, immediately after we became elected, appointed, to the Committee on the National Assembly side. Now, as I recall, I don't see Frank on the screen of participants. Is he coming in, Nkululeko?
Yes, Chairperson is coming, but he's not
all
yet.
All right, but basically you confirm that these are effectively already negotiated and signed off on by the respective governments and institutions that are relevant. The Parliament doesn't have the power to actually amend those because they involve two different countries, and we can't amend something negotiated. At most, I think we can reject it, but it has huge financial tax pursuit issues and other implications. Now, before the new members say, what's the point of bringing it to us if we can't do anything about it? Well, Frank should brief you on that. That's the same question I put to Frank offline, and in the committee, he explained that it's a requirement in the Constitution. So it's in effect more an information and education exercise, more social and political awareness of the issues than any power we have to change it. But maybe I've got that wrong. We haven't had one for years. I've forgotten how it is. We normally have a very brief report. And in years gone by, all we did was we tabled it and usually adopted it on the same day. But if people are unhappy, we can meet tomorrow and adopt it. But in the House, we had no debate. One year, the opposition parties, for reasons unrelated altogether, suppose if we in the opposition would do the same, to the issues at hand, decided they wanted a declaration. So we did. And obviously they didn't speak at all. Well, the one party didn't speak at all about the issues at hand. They were broader issues that we're dealing with, which are totally irrelevant. But in my view, the speaker should have ruled it out. But there you are. I don't know that you can use the Farmgate issue, as it's now called, as an excuse to debate this. But Helman, please, can we just focus on the issues? Because I think we're going to raise endless points of order, whatever the issue is. It must focus on the ratification of these agreements. And they're both quite important. One deals entirely with BEPS, which is something our committee and the committee in the NA has been pursuing relentlessly since, I think, 2014, and maybe the committee before that. So having said that, is Frank here? Does he want to explain the parameters within which we process this? Frank, are you here now? I should have rung you yesterday to check. I just take it you're always here.
Maybe not yet, Chair. Let me call him on the side, Chair.
Yeah, just check. He might be in another meeting because the last week of Parliament is a nightmare for the legal services unit. Okay, having said that, we've also got minutes sent out to you. Nkululeko, you sent the edited minutes now, right? Have they been sent out? All right, he'll let us know. Let's go then. Over then to who's speaking? Is Treasury? Who's here from Treasury? Please go ahead.
Good morning, Chair.
My friend. Yeah, okay, let's go for it.
Okay, thank you, Chair, for giving us the opportunity. Today, we are briefing you on the two most important international agreements. Because, for example, the one for Kuwait, we've already got a court case and a judgment against SARS in this regard. And the one for the BEPS MLI, it is important that we ratify because we've already got an unfavorable rating as one of the countries that have not yet ratified, even though we signed in 2017. So I'm going to start, Chair, with the Kuwait protocol and the background as to why we are here today. The current tax treaty between South Africa and Kuwait came into force in 2006. I don't know whether Nkululeko is putting on the presentation. In 2007, South Africa announced the changes to the secondary tax on companies, and we moved from secondary tax on companies to a dividend tax at a shareholder level like other countries. So the implementation of a dividend withholding tax was contingent to the renegotiation of the 10 tax treaties that had a zero rate withholding on dividend tax. And these treaties were Australia, Cyprus, Ireland, Kuwait, Netherlands, Malta, Oman, Seychelles, Sweden, and the UK. The renegotiations of these tax treaties was concluded in 2007 and 2008. And it is important to note that all the protocols amending these tax treaties are in force except for the SA-Kuwait tax treaty. So for some 10 years now, for the past 10 years, South Africa has been requesting Kuwait to sign the protocol. And all the time when we're about to sign, Kuwait will raise some new issues. In so much that the changes to the delay to the implementation of the protocol, we even contacted Advocate Frank Jenkins at some stage to ask whether the procedure for the termination of the tax treaty because of the court cases, because we had a judgment in 2019 against us. And the judgment is also in the Netherlands based on this tax treaty. So it is important to note that even though South Africa is doing ratification today, if Kuwait may take some time to ratify because they took some time to sign, if Kuwait does not ratify within maybe a period of a year from now, we may be knocking at your doors to ask the procedure for the termination of the tax treaty, because South Africa has never before terminated the tax treaty. So the second slide is dealing with the background to South Africa-Kuwait protocol as well, to say that on 17 December 2019, South Africa signed the Kuwait protocol. Here we want to tell you the delay that Kuwait has given regarding the signing of the protocol. And the importance of us giving this delay is that if Kuwait is delaying the ratification, we'll be left with no choice but to terminate the tax treaty with Kuwait. After the signature, we delivered the protocol to the embassy of Kuwait in South Africa for the signature. However, the embassy advised us that now, the ambassador advised us that they are not able to sign, whereas previously they told us that they can sign. And finally, even though South Africa signed the tax treaty in 2019, Kuwait signed the tax treaty on 1 April 2021 when Minister Naledi Pandor visited Kuwait during the South African state visit to Kuwait. And on 1 September 2021, the ratification of the protocol was included in the parliamentary program for the standing committee. However, we had to remove it because the state law advisors advised us that because it took too long for Kuwait to sign, there's a difference of about almost 2 years, it has to go and serve before cabinet. So it went to cabinet on 16 March, and on 25 May, we went to present the protocol to the Standing Committee on Finance. Next slide. Coming to the agency of the SA-Kuwait protocol, as we have said that the reason why this is urgent, it is due to the fact that on 19 January 2019, the Netherlands Supreme Court issued a judgment in favor of the taxpayer on the application of the most favored nation clause between the SA and Netherlands tax treaty. The issue of the most favored nation clause goes like this. For example, when we negotiated those tax treaties, the 10 tax treaties, the first movers, the countries that were the first movers, for example, Netherlands and Sweden, they said to us that we are the first movers, therefore, we want you to include in the protocol a clause saying that this treaty will be enforced together with all other 10 countries that are negotiating. Therefore, we will have a most favorable nation clause to say that we cannot enforce this up until all the other tax treaties that are being renegotiated are enforced. That is the general practice in international agreements. That is, whenever you renegotiate or negotiate a treaty, the first movers will always want a similar treatment to the others to say that if you negotiate with us and we agree first, we're not going to implement this up until all the countries have agreed. So we were forced in the Netherlands text treaty to have that most favored nation article. So we did that. So because we have it in the Netherlands article, in the Netherlands text treaty, the most favored nation clause, and whereas the Kuwait still had zero withholding tax, the taxpayers in Netherlands took the Netherlands government to court on the application of the tax treaty between Netherlands and South Africa. So it went all the way to the Supreme Court of Appeal, and the Netherlands lost at the Supreme Court of Appeal. And when we met with our Netherlands colleagues, they told us that it is important that even on the South African context, it has to go to court, because they were like fighting our own cause. That is, Netherlands was fighting because we requested to have these changes in the tax treaty. Yes, indeed. On 12 June 2019, we also went to court in the Cape Town tax court, and also South Africa lost. We were issued with a similar judgment as in Netherlands. So it is important to note that both Netherlands government and South African government lost in court, based on the fact that the tax treaty between South Africa and Kuwait is still not yet in force. So this is where the urgency of the tax treaty is. And it is a loss to the fiscus, because now the dividends that are paid from South Africa to Netherlands, we do not have to withholding tax because of the court case. So the dividend that are paid from South Africa to Netherlands, it's zero withholding tax on dividends instead of 5 and 10%. So coming to the proposed amendments to the SA Kuwait Protocol. It is important to note that when we renegotiate a tax treaty, even though we'll want to renegotiate only one article, the other tax treaty country partner will say these are some of the provisions or articles that we want to negotiate. For example, Article 1, taxes covered. Kuwait requested that on the side of Kuwait, the tax treaty should apply to the following taxes: Decree number 3 of 1955, as amended by Law number 2 of 2008, Law number 23 of 1961 of the Neutral Zone, and Law number 19 of the Supporting of National Employees. The nice thing in the South African context is that we group our taxes according to the type of tax, not according to the laws. So our tax, which even if maybe we introduce employment tax incentive or capital gains tax, that will fall under normal tax. And then the tax treaties will also cover withholding tax on royalties, dividend tax, withholding tax on interest, and tax on foreigner entertainers and sports persons. So those are the changes that were made in Article 1 based on what Kuwait requested. With regard to Article 2 dealing with resident, the term resident on the South African context, it remained unchanged. But Kuwait requested the following changes: that with regard to Kuwait, the resident will mean a Kuwait national and a company or an entity which is incorporated in Kuwait, and an individual who is present in Kuwait for a period or totaling at least 183 days in the fiscal year concerned. So they also included the physical presence test, of which you can see their physical presence test is shorter than the South African physical presence test. And then we go to Article 3, dividends. This is the main reason for the renegotiation of the agreement. So Article 3 of the protocol dealing with the taxation of dividends in Article 10 was renegotiated, because what we wanted to do, we wanted to have a withholding tax rate in the source state. As such, this article makes provision for the shared right of taxation of dividends between the source of dividends and the country of resident. As a result, it introduces a withholding tax rate for taxation of dividends in the source states as follows: 5% for shareholding of at least 10% and 10% in all that other cases. Also, it introduces exemption from taxation of dividends in the source state in respect of dividends paid to government. And government is defined to include central bank, reserve bank, as well as wholly owned state entities. That exemption is also available also in our South African domestic tax law. So this was the main reason as to why the tax treaty was renegotiated, because we wanted to introduce withholding tax for dividends. Also, other changes were Article 4 dealing with withholding tax on interest. And also, these changes were made so that the article regarding the taxation of interest makes provision for the shared right of taxation of interest between the source state and the resident state of the recipient of interest. And we also introduced a withholding tax rate of 5% on the gross amount of interest. Also, an exemption was introduced in respect of interest paid by the government, central bank, reserve bank, or wholly owned state entities. The next one is dealing with capital gains. The current Article 13 dealing with capital gains was replaced with the new article, whereby the new article was making provision for the capital gains derived from the alienation of immovable property to be taxed in the contracting state in which the immovable property is situated. Also, we made a provision for the gains derived from the alienation of shares in a company deriving more than 50% of the value directly or indirectly from the immovable property located in the contracting state to be taxed in the state in which the immovable property is situated. This is a new trend in the taxation of capital gains, because we find out that for anti-avoidance measures, taxpayers will go and form a company, and that company will buy the property. And instead of selling the property directly, they sell the shares in a company that owns the property. So this is meant to stop that, to say that if you are selling the shares in a company that is owning the property, then the gains will be taxed in the country in which the immovable property is situated. And then Article 6 dealing with exchange of information. Here, in line with the BEPS, because after the BEPS in 2008, there was an issue regarding the exchange of information regarding transparency and everything. So the new article of exchange of information in Kuwait makes provision for the exchange of information to be extended to cover taxes of every kind and description. This is good, because what happens is that the tax treaty only covers direct taxes. It does not cover indirect taxes, for example, VAT. So this article regarding exchange of information, if you say taxes of every kind and description, this will imply that you can even exchange information even on VAT. So this is a good one. And then we also preserved the confidentiality of the exchange of information received, because this is in line with the confidentiality available in the Income Tax Act. And then it allows for the spontaneous exchange of information. That is, you must not wait for the other country to request for the information. If you, as a tax official in Kuwait, you see that this information can assist South African government, then you can exchange that information, likewise as in South Africa. And it also makes provision that the limitation of obligation when changing information should not be construed to permit a contracting state to decline the supplying of that information based on bank secrecy. The last one, dealing with entry into force and status of the protocol. This is a general article that is always available. That is, when will be the protocol or the treaty enter into force? Article 8 of the protocol deals with the status of the protocol and makes provision for the following: the protocol to remain in force as long as the agreement remains in force, And then even though both the English and Arabic text of the protocol are equally authentic, in the case of dispute, the English text will prevail. Thank you, Chair. That's all with regard to the Kuwait SA protocol. Thank you.
Hang on. I think we should take one at a time, right? Because they're quite complex. And, is Frank here? Nkululeko, is Frank here?
I'm here, Chairperson. Good morning.
Frank, before we go on, because look, I don't think new members are familiar with this. I can't recall that you made an input to us. I basically crudely summarized as follows. These are agreements that have been finalized between two countries, right? It's the first time I come across a situation that I can remember that they might analyze because of the lack of cooperation of Kuwait in this particular case. But as it stands, I just summarize it like this. Maybe I got it wrong. Where these agreements are signed off, Parliament really, strictly speaking, can't change the actual amendments because they've been signed by two countries, one of which is not before in terms of oversight. Its government's not before Parliament, right? That's Kuwait in this case. Now, the most we can do is reject it and ask for it to go back, right? Now, you said to us, as I recall, I've forgotten now, we haven't had these agreements for so many years now, that it's covered actually in the Constitution, I think, where they have to table it. So effectively, it's a tabling. The most power we have is to reject something, I think, or accept it. But the Norman Parliament has been that we accept it, though we write a report, maybe not happy about certain things, we can note our unhappiness, we can note our disagreement in a report, maybe, but we can't amend it. Have I got that right? Or this is a crude summary because I was hoping you would come and present it. Can you do that, please? So we know within which parameters we are going to process this agreement or protocol, as it's called. Frank, over to you, and then we'll throw it open to the members.
Chairperson, you're correct. Section 231 of the Constitution provides for Parliament's role in international agreements. And the two international agreements that's referred to there is one is an agreement that's been signed. It's negotiated by the executive. It's signed by the executive. Parliament ratifies it. So it's the last step. Now, international agreements have their own kind of existence. Some international agreements will come into operation when it's ratified. Some is only when the instrument of ratification is deposited. And that depends from treaty to treaty. But the one we're dealing with today is not is one that Parliament can only ratify, approve, or disapprove. We can't amend it. The other agreement is agreements that Parliament take note of. These are technical agreements that we don't have to approve because they're of a technical nature. These are the Section 231(3) agreements. So, Chair, you're correct. We cannot amend it. We can only approve or reject it. So it's really, for Parliament, it's a very limited role in that sense. And because it's because of the allocation of powers, I would say, and the signing of negotiating of international agreements is left to the executive. Parliament does not have a specific role, a constitutional role there. Of course, the executive can come and discuss it, or Parliament can call the executive when these things when these treaties are being negotiated to get a sense of where it's going. But this is where we are, Chair, if you've summarized it correctly. Thank you.
One question before I throw it open for clarity. The new members have a right to clarify in their own heads and consult with their lawyers and, you know, take it to the Constitutional Court and all that, whatever they've got time for. But what I understand, would it be correct to say that because these are international agreements, we are not a federal state, right? The NA committee has a primary role in this regard. I mean, there's no provincial angle here. I mean, when the Constitution said Parliament, strictly for what I can tell, it should be the NA. I mean, what can we do? The NA has adopted it, right? Has passed a report to that effect. And presumably our draft report, which you've helped shape, which is a standard report, a few lines, I've seen it, both of them, over Sunday night or Monday, yesterday, Gulekwan had an exchange. I mean, I just want to ask now that I'm on this side of the house, as it were, Well, what's the point of bringing it to the NCOP, really? What can we do? I mean, there's no like KZN angle on it. What am I supposed to say as an individual permanent delegate, for example? Okay, over to you, and then we'll throw it open.
Chair, you're correct. Mostly there's no provincial angle to it, and we're not a federal state. Even if there was a provincial angle, and one can imagine there's some environmental treaties might have a provincial slant on it, or treaties on the use of water and so on might have a provincial angle on it. But this one doesn't. But I do think it's probably just for to make it easier that both houses must just approve it and not to distinguish between an NCOP role in certain international agreements and not in others. So that's all I can think of, Chair. But it is what it is. And I agree with you. There is very specifically with this one that's dealing with tax as well. There's no real specific role for the NCOP, but it's a constitutional requirement of compliance that the NCOP must also approve it. Both houses must approve
it. No, I get it. All right. Okay. Over to members. Antigula is banned from asking any questions. She knows about all of this. All right, Dennis.
Good morning, Chair. Thanks very much. I do think that this, I do disagree with you slightly. It doesn't make, it's not a material argument, but I think this points slightly to the senatorial role that was envisioned for the NCOP at some stage. But, you know, getting into that debate could take weeks. So, and I think it's a discussion that's
ongoing. No, I'm interested. Raise it in the Constitutional Court, Dennis. Those things are good.
No, absolutely. There you go.
I'm not a lawyer.
It's something you and I won't agree on, and certainly not here. So I have just three questions, really, to the presenters. And the first is, does this treaty differ materially from others? And if so, in what way? The next question is, how many other treaties are impacted by this particular court ruling? In other words, is this triggering a review of all of our treaties, or is it only specific ones that are impacted? And the last one is only something that came to me while we were sitting through the presentation, is that what are the implications of not having treaties in place in other countries? So in response to the court ruling. So it looks like it's a case of someone saying, well, you know, if you haven't got a treaty with somebody else, then the default must apply to us. So having a few treaties, does that cover everything in terms of this court ruling, or do we need to have a treaty with every single country in the world? Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, you actually went into the substance of the protocol. I was actually at that stage when you spoke asking if you want clarity on the process, but it's fine. You spilled over it. There's no harm. And you covered actually two of the issues I wanted to raise, but I don't see anybody else up, which doesn't surprise me for once. And I'm not going to prod Fani to speak or Molezane to speak. I mean, what's
the question?
Oh, okay, Njadu, you don't have to speak, but fine. Yes, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good morning to all the members. Chairperson, it was also my point of clarity that I would want to understand the impact on this matter, especially on the urgency of it and the court case also. For us as South Africa, how much pressure did it give to us that, yes, understanding the delays of Kuwait and all those things, but what will be the impact? That I think that's the essence of the question, is to the impact of this matter.
Okay, thank you for that. Yeah, okay. So firstly, I'm covered by Dennis about, well, you know, the way he puts it is a default thing, right? And then secondly, maybe it's not protocol, or diplomacy, diplomatic, to sort of say, but why is Kuwait being so, slow, tardy? I don't know what the word is. Frank can help in that regard. I don't fully understand some of the things you're saying. I'm open and upfront. I don't fully understand. Nor is it my requirement as chairing an NCOP committee to have that. These things are very complex, and I think that nobody should pretend that we fully understand the issues. We must acknowledge our limits. But on the Dutch court ruling against South Africa, I don't fully understand what you're saying, Younger, and I really don't think it's relevant to the processing of this thing because the limits and parameters in which we have to process this. Now, I don't remember, Younger, or Frank, or Dikeledi, ever we had the problem of actually having to annul something. You know, I don't recall that. This is a new sort of territory we're entering into. Now, the way you present it, it's as if, you know, Kuwait's been the sole, let's say, problem in processing this. But, you know, this has been lingering there, languishing since 2017, if I understand you. Now, that's 5 good years later. Is there nothing National Treasury could have done to expedite this process? Yeah, okay, fine. There it is. For what it's worth, over to you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I will start, and Mr. Franz Tomasek from SAS, who has also been part of the process, will add. Starting, Chair, to the issue of the delay, when you have to, when there is an international agreement between the two countries, we have to go through the diplomatic channels. We communicated with DECO, and Kuwait was coming to all our meetings. Every time they'll say yes, they'll agree to come to the meetings, but on each and every meeting, they'll raise a new thing or say, or put another date for the signing of the treaty. In so much that I think it was in 2019, whereby we also conducted Advocate Frank Jenkins regarding the process of the termination of the treaty because we had to do it correctly. But as you know, if a country terminates a treaty, it becomes a big thing. And then DECO again negotiated with Kuwait because we did advise the Kuwaitis in 2019 that if now they don't come to the party, we will be left with no choice but to terminate. This was after the court ruling because there was loss to the fiscus based on the court ruling and the fact that the Kuwait treaty is still not yet in force. So in terms of the process, we have been trying, Chair, but because it's difficult to terminate the international agreement, and we have, even if we terminate, we have to go through this process in Parliament because when it has to enter into force, we have to come to Parliament. So for termination, we have to request Parliament regarding termination. Hence, we are saying that if we come today, we ratify, but Kuwait delays in ratifying, we'll be forced to come to Parliament to terminate. At least Parliament now is aware of the process and the issues. Coming to the question of Mr. Dennis Ryder, of which some are technical questions, I'll ask also Franz Tomasek to come in. Does the treaty differ materially from the others? No. This treaty does not differ from the text treaties that were renegotiated. And with regard to the impact of the court case, I hope I will clarify this. What happens is that in 2007, we had to renegotiate 10 text treaties that had zero withholding tax on dividends because we were switching from secondary tax on companies to a dividend tax at a shareholder level. So we identified these countries, we wrote letters to these countries. So the countries that we negotiated with them first, that is Sweden and Netherlands, they requested what is called the most favored nation clause to be included. And the most favored nation clause is saying that if you are renegotiating with us and we sign first, you cannot effect these amendments up until all the other 10 countries that you are saying you are renegotiating with have already implemented. So that is the most favored nation clause, which is always required by the first movers. So what happened is that all the other countries implemented except for Kuwait, because Kuwait still has got zero withholding tax on dividends. So what happened is that in Netherlands, the taxpayer in Netherlands said to the Netherlands government, you cannot at all implement the withholding tax on dividends in respect of dividends paid from Netherlands to South Africa because the Kuwait tax treaty is still not yet in force and they invoked the most favored nation article. So the Netherlands went to court, but they lost. So also in South Africa, taxpayers that are paying dividends from South Africa to Netherlands went to court and say that you cannot implement this because the Kuwait tax treaty is still not yet in force. And then we also lost. So this implies that in terms of the impact, this implies that dividends paid by South Africa to Netherlands are not subject to withholding tax and dividends. And also dividends paid by Netherlands to South Africa. So the revenue loss is not only in Netherlands, in South Africa, also Netherlands, because they also introduced withholding tax and dividends. They are also suffering because based on the tax treaty and the most favored nation clause, and the fact that Kuwait tax treaty is still not yet in force, dividends paid by Netherlands to South Africa are not subject to withholding tax. So this is a loss to the fiscus. Thank you. Franz?
Eternal Franz Tomasek.
Great. Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you, Yanga, and good morning, members. So I don't really have a lot to add to that. There was a question from the Honourable Ryder with respect to does this mean we have to have a treaty with everyone? And the answer there is no, because what triggers a most favoured nation situation is where a treaty gives a better benefit than what that treaty has. So to take the example here, the Netherlands would have had a withholding tax, but the most favoured nation clause would have said, if there is another treaty where the withholding tax is lower, we get the same treaty, same treatment. And so if there is no treaty in place, a most favored nation clause cannot be triggered because you don't get a better treatment.
Is that it? You're not adding anything more. That's it. Hello?
That's it, Chair.
Good. All right. Follow-ups, please. Who's there? Let's see. Nobody. Right. So for now, there's no further input until we, come back to the discussion after the next agreement, right? So can we move on to the next one, please, Yanga? Excuse me.
Oh, thank you, Chair. The next argument is also important. This one is not a bilateral agreement like South Africa-Kuwait agreement. This one is the multinational international agreement. That is, it involves all the member countries that are members of the BEPS and inclusive framework. And why are we in the BEPS MLI agreement? In terms of the background, after the 2008 world financial crisis, the G20 ministers of finance agreed to a framework to address a base erosion and profit shifting. And then in October 2015, the OECD presented the final package of the BEPS to the G20 ministers of finance. It is important that, and heads of state, South Africa is the member of the G20, but South Africa is the only African country that is the member of the G20. And that importance is that whenever we go to this agreement, to these negotiations, we have to be aware that even though we are the member of the G20, but we have to represent also the interest of other African countries. South Africa is not a member of the OECD, but is one of the member countries of the Inclusive Framework on BEPS. And the Inclusive Framework on BEPS consists of about 137 countries, of which 23 are African countries. And the Inclusive Framework on BEPS assists in developing the framework for implementation, review, and monitoring of the BEPS package. As indicated, the BEPS package consists of 15 action items. And one of the 15 action items is Action 15, which provides for the development of the multinational instrument capable of implementing the BEPS treaty-related measures. South Africa was part of the negotiation because we are part of the inclusive framework and the part of the steering group. South Africa signed the BEPS MLI on 7 June 2017. As of 11 August 2021, 95 countries have signed and 13 African countries and 65 have ratified and deposited the instruments of ratification. Although we signed in 2017, but we have not yet ratified, this implies that the BEPS MLI is not applicable to South Africa up until we have ratified, as Advocate Frankie Jenkins have said, that up until Parliament has approved this in terms of Section 231 of the Constitution. We served the BEPS MLI before Cabinet on 16 March 2022 for approval for ratification. So what is this BEPS MLI? I'm going to deal with the general concept. Mr. Tomasek is going to take you through to the articles. As indicated earlier, the BEPS MLI is aimed at updating the existing network of bilateral tax treaties so as to reduce the opportunities for base erosion and profit shifting. It incorporates and strengthens the following treaty-related BEPS measures: Action 2, dealing with hybrid mismatches; Action 6, dealing with tax treaty abuse; Action 7, dealing with artificial avoidance of permanent establishment; and Action 14, dealing with improving dispute resolution. It also enables parties to meet the following treaty-related minimum standards, that is Action 6, dealing with the prevention of tax treaty abuse, and Action 14, dealing with the improvement of dispute resolution. So the BEPS MLI will be applied alongside the bilateral existing tax treaties. For example, we've got these existing tax treaties with the Kuwait. So the Kuwait tax treaty will apply and the BEPS MLI will also apply. However, there may be circumstances in which a country prefers not to include a specific tax treaty in the scope of the application of the BEPS MLI because the tax treaty has already been renegotiated to implement the BEPS outcomes. So each country is allowed to choose which reservations it will make to their BEPS MLI. For example, if a country opts out of a provision or part of a provision, the change made by that provision will not apply to that particular country. And the country is also permitted to withdraw a reservation but may not introduce a new reservation after its ratification. Application of the BEPS MLI in the South African tax treaty context. Currently, South Africa has 79 bilateral tax treaties in force, with two more awaiting ratification in the other country. 76 tax treaties have been listed by South Africa to be covered by the BEPS MLI. Only 5 tax treaties will not be covered by the BEPS MLI, and these tax treaties include Germany, Zambia, Malawi, Grenada, and Sierra Leone. South Africa did not include these tax treaties with Germany, Malawi, and Zambia in the list because we are in the process of renegotiating these tax treaties so as to include the provisions of the BEPS MLI. With regard to Grenada and Sierra Leone, we did not include them because those tax treaties are old tax treaties whereby with Grenada, you enter into a treaty with the United Kingdom, for example, and then it will also apply to Grenada. So in that scenario, if South Africa wants to have a bilateral agreement with Grenada, we have to enter into a new bilateral agreement. So the agency of the BEPS MLI, one of the measures adopted by the Inclusive Framework for the Monitoring of the Implementation of the BEPS Package is the peer review mechanism. However, based on the fact that South Africa has not yet ratified and implemented the BEPS MLI, this implies that South Africa has already earned a negative point in the Action 6 peer review mechanism. This is what I said in the beginning, because if we signed in 2017 and have not yet ratified, the delays in the ratification process implies that we will be earning a negative point on the peer review. After ratification of this, the instruments of ratification will be deposited to the OECD. So coming to the articles of the BEPS MLI, Franz Tomasek, over to you.
Great, thank you, Yanga. So we'll begin with Article 1, which is the scope of the convention. And it basically summarizes what Younger has already explained. I think there's an important point to make here, which is that the two sit together. So the MLI will sit next to a DTA. So you can almost think of it in the South African context as having an amendment bill that sits next to the main act, and then an amendment act that sits next to the main act. And so it doesn't actually change the underlying treaty. So if this applies to, say, a treaty, and you won't see that treaty being changed, the two will coexist next to each other. And you will understand that that can be a little confusing for taxpayers and probably for SARS staff too. So what we're in the process of doing is we're working with treaty partners to come up with what are known as synthesized texts. So essentially, those are an explanation of what the DTA would look like if there was a modification, so that it's more understandable. You don't have to try and read the two sitting next to each other. The work's been done for you. Now, those don't have legal force, but we do try to agree them with the other country so that we both have a common understanding. And we're quite well advanced in that. We've done that with a number of other countries so far. But there are a fair number of others that are saying, well, look, hang on a second. We can only give you priority for this sort of thing once you've ratified. So come back to us once you've ratified, and then we'll work on that synthesized text with you. So once South Africa has ratified, we'll be in the fortunate position of being able to publish a number of these synthesized texts immediately, and then we will work on expanding the coverage so that there are a broad range of synthesized texts to assist both taxpayers and SARS staff. Moving us along to Article 2, interpretation of terms. I think the important one here is the covered tax agreements, and slide 7, that we've gone into a fair amount of detail on that, so I'm not going to repeat it there. And we can move on to the next slide. And here we start getting into the meat of the thing. And these are hybrid mismatches. So in South African domestic law, we already have a provision, Section 8E, which deals with hybrid instruments. And so that's an instrument where it looks like it's debt on the one side of the border, but it looks like equity on the other side of the border. And Article 3 now deals with a similar situation, but now we're talking about the entity itself. So here you could have an entity that on one side of the border looks like it is a company, but on the other side of the border, it looks like it is a partnership. And so you have a bit of a problem here. And so the transparent entities provision tries to deal with that. And so we have no reservations here. We'd like that to come into force in our treaties. And so that one would go through. The next is the so-called dual residence. And this is for companies. This is something that is in the South African treaties, the more modern ones, which is to say that where you have a company that is supposedly resident on both sides of the border, then it comes to the mutual agreement process between the two tax administrations to work out where that company is primarily resident for treaty purposes. So a tiebreaker rule. Now, this is quite rare. I mean, generally, a company will be incorporated in a particular jurisdiction. It'll be managed and controlled in that jurisdiction. All the usual tests for determining, you know, where that company is resident will be in one jurisdiction. But there are the odd occasions where this doesn't happen. And sometimes the reason it doesn't happen is because someone's trying to play a bit of a tax planning game here. By trying to make it not resident in either jurisdiction or resident in a particular favorable jurisdiction, and this would then combat that. And again, no reservation from South Africa on that one. Then we get to Article 5, which speaks to the ways to eliminate double taxation. Now, generally speaking, this is already dealt with in our DTAs, and if it isn't, it is dealt with in our domestic law already. We have specific provisions to deal with the elimination of double taxation. South Africa thus has entered a reservation on this article. So we move on to treaty abuse. And we'll get to Article 6, which is the purpose of a covered tax agreement. Now, this may look like a bit of fluff because it amends the preamble and makes it clear that one of the things that you're trying to do with the DTA is eliminate double taxation, and here's the important part, without creating opportunities for non-taxation or reduced taxation through tax evasion or avoidance. Now, the reason that is a useful thing to put in the preamble is that it helps a court when interpreting the DTA with the domestic law, so that if you get a result that flies in the face of the preamble, but there's an equally plausible result that does not fly in the face of the preamble, a court would then say, well, the preamble gives me guidance as to how to interpret this, and I should go with the alternative that doesn't permit the tax avoidance, for example. So no reservation entered here. We get to Article 7, which is the prevention of treaty abuse. You have three options that you can go with here. And what South Africa has gone with here is the principal purpose test. So if the principal reason, one of the main reasons you have entered into a particular structure or transaction is to avoid or evade tax, it can be disregarded. And that is consistent with the South African general anti-avoidance rule. So we have a baseline we can work from, which is why this was attractive to us. It is also probably the simpler of the options, because even the simplified limitation of benefits clause runs to something like 4 pages of text. So you can just imagine if that's the simplified limitation of benefits, the full limitation of benefits would be significantly more complex. So we move on to Article 8, and now here what you can have is a situation, you've just heard about the situation in Kuwait, where if you have a particular shareholding, you can get a lower withholding tax, that's similarly in the Netherlands. And now the question then is, well, can I then quickly enter into a transaction the day before the dividend is due, push up my shareholding, get the lower rate, and then revert to the usual situation the day after the dividend has flowed through? And so what this rule says, no, you can't. We have to look at things over a 365-day period. And so, again, no reservation entered into by South Africa. Similarly, for capital gains, you could try and change the structure of the shareholding in the company or the assets in the company, just to try and sidestep the thresholds that have been put in place, the 50% threshold, say, of the value being attributable to fixed property. You, for example, quickly push some financial instruments into the company so that its value attributable to the fixed property drops to, say, 45%. You fall outside the rule. And then a few days afterwards, you can take the financial instruments out of the company again, and all is well. This again says, no, there's a 365-day period over which this needs to be looked at so that you can't get into that kind of short-term planning. Now, that takes us to Article 10. Now, this is an anti-abuse rule for permanent establishments in a third jurisdiction. This one we've entered a reservation on because we believe the principal purpose test covers it. If it turns out we're incorrect, you'll remember Younger made the point that you can withdraw a reservation. You just can't create a new one. So we are always in a position to withdraw if that becomes necessary. Article 11, and this should seem as if it is self-evident, but not always. And it says that you are permitted to tax your own residence. And so the DTA should not, except in very specific and clear circumstances, touch on your ability to tax your own residence. And that makes sense to us. So no reservations on this article either. That takes us on to Article 12. And now this is the artificial avoidance of permanent establishment status through a commissionaire arrangement. South Africa has entered a reservation on this article because this is something that you would typically run into in a civil law jurisdiction, and we're a common law jurisdiction. So that's a reservation there. Perhaps I should just step back for a moment, given that some members perhaps are not fully familiar with the concept of permanent establishment. And so a permanent establishment is when you have sufficient presence in a country that that country can begin to tax you. Classically, that would mean that someone sets up an office in your country, starts doing business through it. Now, there's sufficient presence in your country that you can then begin to tax that part of the operation. Whereas if someone were just to visit for, say, a few days, do some business and then leave, it would A, be very difficult from a conceptual and B, from a practical perspective, to tax the business that was being done. So it's essentially a threshold test at when the country where this is all happening gets a right to tax. We move on to Article 13. And so what you will see there is, and what sometimes happens is a taxpayer will try and split up its activities so that it doesn't reach the threshold. So it will have 5 or 6 different operations in a country geographically dispersed to try and argue, well, actually, no, no single one of those is high, gets to the level where a permanent establishment has been created. So what we're doing is we have opted for what is known as option A here, with anti-fragmentation rules to prevent that from happening. And this is quite important for digital sales because sometimes what's happening here is a large online operator will move into your jurisdiction and create warehouses in the jurisdiction, but say, look, a warehouse on its own isn't sufficient to create presence. And on the old readings of the treaties, that was an arguable proposition. This makes that a much more difficult proposition, given how important warehousing would be in that particular context, for example. So option A, as I say, with anti-fragmentation rules, which moves us on to Article 14, which is a similar concept, except now what you're trying to do is split up the contracts. We think the PPT covers this one, the principal purpose test. So we've entered a reservation on this article. And then Article 15, members will be aware of the concept in South African law of a connected person, where we try to cover the situation where closely related persons work together to try and get a tax benefit. Similar concept here now for Article 15. We have a definition for what is a closely related enterprise. And so we have not entered a reservation on this because we think that is useful, and it will speak to Article 13, where we have not entered a reservation. Moving on to Article 16. And this is mutual agreement processes. So this is a minimum standard, so there are limited reservations here, and you'll see that we have reserved on Article 6.1. Now, what this would have meant would have been that a South African taxpayer could have gone to the other tax authority to raise an issue that needs to be raised with South Africa, which to our mind doesn't make a great deal of sense. So we've gone for the option that allows us which requires the South African taxpayer to come to us, and then we will then automatically notify the other jurisdiction of the issue. So that way we're both in the loop, which is the key point here, that both jurisdictions should know what's going on, but we've preserved that each jurisdiction will be dealing with its own taxpayers. And then we get to Article 17. So this is the so-called corresponding adjustment. What that means is that if South Africa makes an adjustment, which, say, increases the profit in South Africa, that probably means that the profit has reduced in the other jurisdiction and they may need to reduce the tax charged or the other way around. And so this essentially talks to the best practice around doing that kind of corresponding adjustment. Now, that has been our position in our treaties, so no reservation here. We have that position in practice already. And then we get to part six, which is arbitration. This was an optional inclusion along with most developing countries. South Africa has not gone with binding compulsory arbitration. This is something that most developing countries have had a difficult experience with in the bilateral investment treaty space. There's a great deal of skepticism as to whether it's appropriate. And so South Africa has not opted for this optional part. And so no notification is required here because we're not explicitly opting into it. And then we get to part seven, which are all the technical provisions about signature, ratification, and so forth. I'm not going to bore the committee with this, but essentially these are the sort of nuts and bolts of the process as to how you get this multilateral convention, get your ratification of the multilateral convention recognized, depositing it with the depository, the secretariat, and so on. Available to answer any questions members may have on this, but I don't think there are any particular issues that arise from those aspects.
Yeah, thank you, Franz. It's more familiar territory, most of the issues you raised here. Overlaps with issues that we've addressed in the last term. I can only observe that, I think I've said this before, that you have considerable experience in this area and, you have a lot of institutional memory and a lot of knowledge. And I don't know whether you're one of the people who survive for another 300 years, but in case that's not the case, I hope that there are others who are with you side by side as you
relates to the process that we're following here, and I understand fully the fact that can't really change too much. I do not. At all in this process. If one considers the TALAB, the Tax Administration Laws Amendment Bill that we consider every year, and the Tax Administration Law. TLAB and TALAB that we consider each year, those go through some public participation and get put out for comment. I would suggest that this agreement has similar, fairly substantial impacts on certain taxpayers. And once again, I think putting it out for public comment may give a slightly skewed set of inputs. But at the moment, we have things skewed the other way. And we're implementing something without consulting. And I mean, one of our principles is public participation. So just a question, have we put this out for public participation or for public comment just to get any inputs? And then the big question, I think this is going to become quite a serious set of rules for implementation, both by individuals and companies that are operating cross-border and multinationally or internationally. Is there an easily accessible list of the affected conventions and treaties or the reservations that we have? So you know, people when they are busy planning their tax affairs can access that sort of information and perhaps point us to where that can be found. Chair, thank you very much.
Anybody else? No? Okay, can you reply to those things, Yanga and Franz?
Okay, thank you, Chair. In terms of the public consultation process, the public consultation process is carried through on all the BEPS issues through the global arena, whereby before we go to the meetings, taxpayers will submit the public comments on everything that is happening. Even now, on the taxation of digital economy, we'll have the workshop and we'll have meetings via ATAF, and then taxpayers submit comments directly into the BEPS framework agenda. So that is the public consultation process that is happening, because this is more of a multinational instrument. So that public consultation process occurred earlier on. In terms of the delay in signing, I take the blame regarding the delay. Because firstly, one of the issues regarding the delay is that the agreement was signed by the previous minister, Malusi Gigaba. Thereafter, there was a lot of change of ministers. In 2021, there was COVID. So yes, one would say that we were coming to parliament, but that was the issues that were causing some of the delays, because this will brief the minister, because if maybe Minister Malusi Gigaba continued, because his side, he would have taken this to the cabinet and then to parliament. So the new minister after that was Minister Pravin Gordhan. We briefed and then the minister was changed. But I also take the blame regarding the fact that we should have come earlier, irrespective of the change in the political head. I think in terms of easy accessible of the reservation, I think that is SASIS, that is available on SASIS website, but I'll allow Franz to respond in that. Thank you.
Right, thank you, Yanga. So there are a couple of different places you can look. As I say, so we're hard at work at preparing the synthesized text so that, in fact, you can look at what the situation is between South Africa and another country. If we haven't gotten to that point yet, or you want to look at what the potential is, the OECD website has got a very comprehensive set of information as to who signed, what the instrument of ratification looks like, any notifications they've made. So there is a central, essential repository in Senegal, Serbia, Seychelles, Singapore, Slovak Republic, Slovenia, South Africa, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, etc., and so forth. It's all listed there with date of signature. If it's been ratified, you can click through and have a look at what the instruments of ratification look like. If there's a notification administrations to grapple with this.
Okay. Any follow-ups? Nope. So, on the matter of the first protocol, there is a report. Do people want to vote on it? I can tell you what it reads. It's been sent to you. It's a standard report that's been sent to us each time. So let's take the Kuwait DTA. It simply reads, it's a report, obviously, on what it is. And it says that our committee, having considered the request for approval by Parliament on the protocol amending the agreement between the Government of the Republic of South Africa and the Government of the State of Kuwait for the avoidance of double taxation and the prevention of fiscal evasion with respect to taxes on income, recommends that the House, in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution, approve the said protocol report to be considered. Right. So basically, what's the feeling of the committee?
Yes, Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, on the first protocol, after clarity seeked, is that in terms of the impact of this matter to South Africa, is that it had a shortage on the fiscus. That's my understanding. So as this committee, I think we will have to, in all these developments, to approve this matter because of the impact that it will have on South Africa in terms of the shortage to the fiscus. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Njadu. Is there a seconder? Do we have a quorum in the first instance? Nkululeko?
Yes,
we do. Yes. Yeah, all right. We don't have a seconder. So
I do second. Honorable Chairperson.
Oh, you're seconding. Okay, all right. You're very reluctant to second it. Let me put it to you that Limpopo, there's no direct consequence for Limpopo. So you won't get into trouble with your legislature or your premier there. So, all right, fine. That's moved and seconded. Can we note anything else? Is there...
Yeah, Chair. To protect your health, Chair, and not give you any unnecessary surprises today, the Democratic Alliance would obviously like to reserve its position at this stage on the report. Thank you.
All right, fine. I'm not affected. My health is not affected by that. I've been hearing this since forever. That's fine. Although I think it's a bit patronizing to say, well done, when I'm chairperson, he's complimenting. What you mean is you agree with my sentiments. To say well done is very patronizing, but fine. It's your democratic right to be saying such patronizing things. There's no law against it. Although I do acknowledge people who have a huge contribution to make, yet, of course, as we know, it's maybe human nature. But you make one criticism of the person, and all they will remember is not the 30,000 times you complimented them, the one time you criticized them. But that's how human beings are, unfortunately. Not everybody, fortunately. It certainly doesn't apply to me. I welcome criticism. It's fine. But I will remember your well done for a long time to come. All right. So the second one, funny enough, in general, I'm feeling more comfortable. I don't fully understand the technical issues with the second one, because these are things that are close to our heart, you know, BEPS and so on. And also, we've done a lot of work there. So this one's slightly easier for me, although I don't understand everything you said, Franz. And nor am I supposed to. I mean, I'm not an expert like you on this thing. I'm a mere sociologist by training. Fine. Okay. Then the second one, it reads, it says it's straightforward. It deals with the multilateral convention that we just looked at. And it says that our committee, having considered the request for approval by Parliament on the multilateral convention to implement tax treaty-related measures to prevent base erosion and profit shifting, recommends that the House, in terms of Section 2231, sub 2 of the Constitution, approve the said Here's this word, Franz lawyers, said, Frank, the said multilateral, come, I can't say, approve this multilateral convention, the said, okay, we are in the law area here, but man, it simply say approve the or this multilateral convention. But now to ask the lawyers to change their said, it's like the labor of Sisyphus. Fine, it shall be the same multilateral convention. Anyone confused thinking that there's some other multilateral convention we agreed to? But hey, we got lots of time. Nothing stops us. Nothing in the Constitution or the rules of Parliament that says the chair cannot be facetious. Right, over to you, members. Can I also say here, colleagues from the previous term, we did do some of these things about people who move up and down from one country to another. Funny enough, France, that issue came up, I think, on, when was it? Saturday afternoon, I bumped into somebody who's having that issue, although it wasn't raised officially with me in my capacity that I play here, a role that I play here. In any case, I couldn't do anything about it. We approved of it in Parliament. Sorry. Okay, over then to you, members. Is there a mover and seconder? All right, there's no mover and a seconder. Okay. We'll come back on Friday morning. Sorry, what? Sorry,
is there anyone?
Yeah. This will benefit your province, my friend. Don't worry. Seconder?
A second chair?
You are terrified of the legislatures. That's why they hesitate to move. Okay, I'll move it at Jiffy if I wasn't chairing. Who's a seconder?
Mr. Njato.
Oh, Mr. Njato's seconder. Okay. You're not doing it. You're not doing it on his behalf in Kululeko, are you? Okay. All right, I take it. Okay. Then finally, I take it all the ANC members are supporting. Are there people reserving their right? That will be Dennis Ryder, but he'll take up our time and make a long speech. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. On behalf of all of those that voted in order to place me here, I'd like to say that on behalf of the Democratic Alliance, we would like to reserve our position on this report until we've had time to consult further and get a mandate. That's as long as I can stretch it out. Thanks.
I'll be interested to know how many members in your caucus, they will even understand what you're saying, but good luck. Okay. I mean, they may pretend to understand, at least be more honest here. All right. So basically, now, can I raise another issue for you to mull over, Dennis?
Actually, I've got two more hands.
Oh, right. Okay. Yes. No doubt it's Fani and Molitsane. Yeah, of course it is. I'm good at guessing. Okay. Right. Let's go for it. Molitsane, your hand appears to be above Fani's alphabetically. So you go, Simon.
Thank you, Chairperson. The EFF reserves its position.
That's quite a shock to my health. Okay, right. Next person, please, Fani.
Thank you, Chair. And the Freedom Front Plus reserve our position.
Yeah, I won't say anything, Fani, because you're looking too serious for me to joke. All right, fine. So here it is. It's been adopted, and there are parties, needless to say, who reserve their rights. Good luck to them consulting their caucuses. All right, now... there is one thing I'd like to make. Now, I'm not being facetious. I'm making a point, Dennis, that you might want to mull over, really. So you have the NA who processed this. Now, if we are to have public hearings at all on an international agreement, which has never happened since 1994, and maybe it's necessary, I think it should really be at the NA side. What would be the point of us having public hearings on this side? What provincial angle is there going to be? I don't know, Dennis. I mean, it's become like a mantra. It's like a Pavlovian reaction. Let's have public hearings. But I mean, realistically, who's going to come here from Limpopo to say, oh, you know, I'm unhappy? It's the few people that are affected. The truth is that most of these agreements follow from laws that we've passed, the annual tax laws that we amend. So it's not as if the executive has the power to jump ahead of what's there. And these tax people who are always wanting to evade taxes, not the poor, basically, usually disproportionately, it's the rich. They've got all these experts. Any little thing that Treasury does, they even know when Yanga goes to the toilet, for instance, right? So they monitor these things as far as I know. They know everything. They spend their whole life like hawks monitoring. I really think, Dennis, this is a one time. I have been a great supporter. You know, my background is from the civics. In the 80s, amongst other things. And I was privileged to be there shaping the municipal systems for And I've spoken a million times in this country about the importance of public participation here and elsewhere in the world. And you know what? That's a big thing for me. And even more now than ever before. But on this one, no, man, Dennis, you think about it. What will be the point? But, and you'll raise it again, no doubt. But, you know, think about it. It's really, what's the point? What we can do is write to Joe Maswangani and suggest to him, if that's the view of the entire committee, but it's not so far. If the majority decide that, they must tell me and I will write a brief letter. Okay, to Joe and them and say, hey, guys, please. Guys in the plural sense, or the trudal sense, if there's such a word these days, you know, but really, I don't see the value of public hearings for this. On other things, yes. Now, having said that, Jen, in Kulunek, have you sent out the edited minutes now?
Yes, Chair.
Ah, you've got it. So I haven't got it. I can't find it. I looked for it this morning just before we started, but it's possible it's, it hasn't appeared. But I have the edited ones as they are. In any case, you're putting it on the screen. This is the meeting last week. And I want to draw attention to the fact that we have now taken a resolution that a meeting ends when it ends, unless specifically it's adjourned to continue the next week, okay, or whenever. So you'll see there under three, the committee decided that it is incorrect to use the term adjournment for the end of a meeting unless a meeting is in fact adjourned, okay? Now, I don't want to go into the differences between ending and adjourning, because, I mean, whoever doesn't understand this in the committee section, they must come to the committee chairperson or whoever, go and see Frank, even better. No, they'll see Frank and he'll explain. Or Esther Mohube or Nkululeko will explain, right? So having said that, let's go through it. Page one, there's only noting who's there. And you're very much there, Dennis, in case you get upset, okay, right? Right, the briefing, I mean, I went through this yesterday and, you know, it's fine if all those changes were effected, frankly, I've got nothing to say. Okay, so page two, as it was, page three, page four, page five, we're into page six now, I think, okay, and the meeting did in fact end. Right, move and second, please.
Yeah, Ryder moves for adoption, Chair.
Thank you. You don't want to consult your caucus first. Okay, fine.
Hey, Mama, I'm a second.
No, Fanny Mama, beat you to it. No. You're too slow there. Fanny beat you to it. And you know what? Fanny is easy for him. He just consults himself because his caucus is so small, you know. You understand, Fanny? The best committee is a committee of two when one is absent. Okay? Right. So that could apply to the AFS.
Jefferson, right, I would just like to say that I completely support Mr. Ryder, and it's much easier if you are your own caucus, like Mr. De Toey, but we are and I do support. Thank you.
Ah, so you were sleeping throughout the meeting. Now you have to make your presence felt. So you got up just when you about to conclude, and you put the head up. Like, you know what some members do, right, in all parliaments. They will come, put their head up, say something, and then it's over, and then they like carry on doing whatever they do, right? And then you think they're there.
Isn't that then testimony to the fact that we need to start to have in-person meetings again? So that we can
see what I'm talking about. Look, that issue, I'm cool with whatever's decided, right? But let me put this to you. It happens even in, I'm talking mostly about pre-2020 meetings. Like, you'll see people there, and they're half asleep with their eyes open, or they're busy on the computer with nothing to do, unless they're good at multitasking, of course, with the committee. I mean, I've seen people, right? I know they're working on something else, and then they just speak because they got so used to multitasking. And who is very good at that? Okay, I won't mention the name because she's not in the NC anymore, and she might get annoyed, and it's not fair, but she was great. She didn't miss a word. All right, so having said all of that, I think, if I'm right in Kululeko, we are rid of each other until early August. Am I right, Nkululeko?
That's correct, Chairperson.
Good. So that's a cause for celebration. And secondly, I think when we get back, am I right? They're passing the bills, right? So we'll have two pieces of legislation smack from the beginning of the first meeting, which is long overdue, right? That we process legislation.
You're correct, Chair.
So you will arrange the briefing. Can we finalize the program for the next quarter and send the draft out to members? But on a more serious note, thank you all for your cooperation. It does sound a bit like silly because we'll all be there tomorrow. Exactly the same people. Only you'll have a smarter looking chairperson than now. And a better chairperson, by the way. Much more inclusive and much more sort of compassionate and doesn't hit Dennis Ryder hard like I do. So Dennis, I know who your favorite chair is in the whole of this parliament. So we will articulate it tomorrow. But for now, on behalf of the CECOF, I want to thank you all for your cooperation on a more serious note. And I wish you well over the constituency stroke family period. And this includes Dennis Ryder too. And I don't know what else to say. So we'll adjourn this meeting. We'll adjourn this meeting, okay? Until August next year. Thank you very much. Bye.